About 20 years ago, I had to have my gallbladder removed. So, had to go to the hospital, only about half a block away from where we lived. Went over there. They had me prepped up, ready to go. One problem. The surgeon wasn't there. We had had a snowstorm. He lived in Valparaiso. We lived in Knox. That was about 30 miles away, I think. So here I am on the gurney, ready to go in. And they say, you know, we're going to have to wait. I said, how long? Tomorrow. Now, when you fast and you're ready to go in, and they tell you you're going to have to continue the fast for another day, I was really counting on some food the next day. Not just maybe some water, some green jello, whatever they had. Had to wait. This past week, our SUV went down. It just didn't want to start. You push the button, goes click, 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 click. Or it just kept going on and on and on, but it never would start. We took it to one mechanic. The mechanic said, you know, I've looked over your vehicle, and there doesn't seem to be anything wrong with it. Okay. Go out there. Click, 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 click. It won't start. So we take it to a second mechanic. He looks it over, and he says, I've checked your battery, your alternator, I've checked your starter, I've checked everything. The only thing was a loose cable. You should be good to go. Paid him my check, went out, click, 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 click. Had him come out, it went right away, no problem. I said, well, let's try this again. It went. Third time, it went. Says, I see nothing wrong. However, it's still at the mechanic's shop. We're going to wait till Monday and let him try it again and see what happens. But you know, a lot of times we wait. We wait on our doctors, we wait on our mechanics. And you know, waiting is at its most difficult time when you really don't have a deadline. It's just unending, and you don't know when something's going to happen. And that's why looking into the future is such big business. Just check with the National Enquirer. Fascination with the future is no doubt as old as the human race. And the practice of trying to predict the future ranges from the most primitive tribes, as well as the most scholarly individuals. And somewhere along the way, it's hard to tell one from another at times. Contemporary business, government, industry, educators, churches explore the future with careful, documented studies. And then we kind of leap off into the world of speculation.
But you know, all of those, that's just child's play in comparison to our fascination with the ultimate future of the human race. I mean, we all want to know, where are we going from here? How is it all going to end? So whether we use the spiritual term, or what I would say the scriptural term of the second coming of Christ, or we use the more secular term, the end of the world. I mean, think of all the movies you've seen on the end of the world. No subject seems to have more universal appeal. Now, what I find interesting is there are those who pray for Christ's second coming, and then there are others who pray that maybe not come. So whether someone is desiring the second coming of Christ or dreading it, still there's this component of waiting that is universal with both. Now, I also find it interesting to compare the Old Testament to the New Testament and to see how relevant the Old Testament still is today. For example, as you're reading the Psalms, what's the one of the main questions that you keep running across time and time again? But it's a psalmist who's asking, how long? How long? It's one of the most popular questions of the prophets and the psalmist. In some instances, they are waiting for God's intervention on either a personal level or sometimes on a cosmic level. So we see this waiting happening on both. But regardless, we see them pleading, wanting to know and to have the answers. For how much longer do we need to wait for God to set things right? How long, God? Maybe things aren't going well in my life. Maybe things aren't going well in the world. How long do we have to wait before God sets it right? The New Testament has the same thing, but sometimes even with a sharper focus. When you see Jesus speaking freely about the end of the age, and that's a pretty common phrase with our Christ, and although he gave broader hints, actually, to when this might occur, he always seems to conclude such remarks by saying something like, the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour, as we saw in Matthew 24. And that uncertainty, it's that not knowing that makes us wait with anxious thoughts, that makes it a little more difficult to be calm, cool, and collected. No wonder then that the theme never seems to lose its appeal throughout the centuries. Even the disciples ask Christ, tell us, when will this be? And we see that question in Matthew 24. And they were also picking up where the prophets and the psalmist had left off. And we today pick up where the disciples left off. And it's been 2,000 years just since the disciples, and we're still asking, how long, when will it be? Remember the Y2K scare? You guys remember living through that? When everyone thought the world was coming to an end. I mean, there were crazy amount of disaster scenarios predicted that as we headed from December 31st, 1999 to January 1st, year 2000, that the whole world was simply going to fall apart. You here may recall when Jeremy Ashworth was with you that he led a seminar on Y2K and helped people feel comfortable with the fact that the world was not going to end within 24 hours.
People preach about the second coming or the end of the world, and they write books because it matters so much to all of us. For those of us who are in our teens or older during the 1970s, a book was written. It was entitled The Late Great Planet Earth, which was a fiction book about the end of the age. And if you want to go back even further, people were so excited at the year 999. No, I wasn't there at the time, but there are records that say they were excited when they reasoned that probably Christ would come or the world would end in the year 1000. There were so many pilgrims on the road to Jerusalem because they wanted to be there when they could meet Christ for the end of the world. But it didn't happen, as we all know. Jesus said a great deal about this subject, so if we profess to care about what Jesus said, we have reason to think about it too. It is in that mode that we look at one of the instances when Jesus approached the subject through a parable. He had been telling his disciples not to worry, because life is more than food, and the body more than clothing, which comes from Luke chapter 12, verse 23. He pleaded with them not to strive after the things that occupy the time and minds and affections of the world around us. And then he spoke a wonderful word. He said, "Do not be afraid, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom," which comes from Luke chapter 12, verse 32. The kingdom was just what they're waiting for. They're waiting for that future that God had planned. So they're ready for the story that Jesus told to them.
In Jesus' parable, and this is our last message on parables. We've been doing a series of about six. This is our final one. In this parable, Jesus describes a group of servants who were waiting for their master to return from a wedding banquet. And they were so anxious for his return that they were poised to open that door as soon as he might knock. Such persons, Jesus said, are blessed. I have to just pause there because I found that so fascinating. Those who wait for their master unexpectedly are blessed. We don't always feel that way, do we? I bet you didn't feel blessed as you were lying on that gurney and found out you had to wait another 24 hours. However, you were blessed that he didn't try to come and had an accident, and therefore you at least had a skilled physician there the next day. So sometimes those blessings come a little bit disguised, don't they? Jesus said that they are blessed because when the master finds such alertness, such eagerness to be welcomed, that this is what the master will do, that he will fasten his belt and have them sit down to eat, and he will come and serve them. And that's found in Luke chapter 12. Now, this is an extraordinary picture that's depicted here, because in the first century Middle East, we know for a fact that it's the servants who tucked their garments up underneath their belt to make it easier for them to scurry around and wait upon others. But Jesus portrays a master so pleased with the attitude of his servants that he reverses this normal order. And we see Christ doing that a lot in his ministry, don't we? That he reverses the normal order of what people expect. And he tells his servants to recline to eat as he, the master, fastens his belt so he can serve them. Now, there is good reason for the master's sense of pleasure. These are the servants, Jesus says, who are so dedicated that regardless if their master should come in the middle of the night or even near dawn, that he will find them alert and waiting. There's no hour when the servants stop expecting. And that's key to us. Sometimes we grow weary, don't we? And we wonder if changes are ever going to be made. And we worry and we fuss and we get ourselves all worked up to where we think, well, I'm just going to forget the whole thing. I'm just not even going to try anymore. And we give up too soon. And it's like sometimes, what do they say? It's just the turn of the dawn. That's when things happen. So there's no hour when they stop expecting. Now, what's interesting is the parable changes tunes or message here, or the figure of speech changes. And Christ says, if the owner of the house had known, he compares waiting to a man who has his house broken in and that it comes in like a thief in the night. And we don't think of Christ's return as a thief in the night. So he's not saying, I'm a bad guy. What he's saying is that when a thief is coming, he's not going to tell you when. Otherwise, there would be no destruction there, right? They come unexpectedly. So Jesus says he wouldn't have allowed his house to have been broken in if he'd known that a thief was coming. So he concludes, you also must be ready. Be ready. Don't go asleep. Don't give up. Be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour. Found in Luke 12. Now there's the rub, isn't it? Our Lord's return is going to be at an unexpected hour. And that's what makes waiting just difficult, frustrating, and sometimes so tiring. We have no idea when the consummation is going to take place. And suppose you have set up a strategic appointment, all right? Either a wedding, a meeting with a loan officer, or perhaps it's a visit from a recruiting coach that you've been looking forward to, whether it's a son or daughter, a loved one or neighbor, someone you care about. And you ask, okay, so when can I expect you?
When you don't expect me?
I mean, seriously, could we set a time?
Sure, put me down for an unexpected hour. That's really quite maddening, isn't it? So of course, we keep trying to calculate when that unexpected hour will be. Preachers and earnest Bible students search the scriptures to see if they can locate some obscure text, some exotic symbol, or perhaps some exciting juxtaposition of numbers that will reveal the time. But Jesus said, no one's going to know. But about that day and the hour, no one knows, neither the angels of heaven nor the Son, but only the Father, which comes from Matthew 24:36. Isn't it interesting that people who profess Christ as Lord keep seeking information that Jesus said was simply unavailable? Now, one time, I was up in my grandfather's bedroom, and he had a number of bookcases. He was an educator. He had been a principal for a long time, was in education for 40 years. And I found a pamphlet, and the pamphlet said about when Christ was going to come, when the end of the world was going to be. I thought, well, that's pretty interesting. I think I'll read this over. And so it had the numbers 666 on there, you know, and everything. So I read through it, and I thought, huh. And I looked at the copyright date, and it was 1944. Now think about 1944, towards the end of World War II. Who was the one who was 666? Hitler. Well, you know what? We made it past Hitler and Mussolini and all the other dictators that we've had throughout. Well, maybe, mind you, that Christ gave us a hint just after he said that, but no one but God knows the day or the hour, he continued, for as the days of Noah before the flood, everyone was eating, drinking, being merry, getting married, until the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing until the flood came and swept them all away. So too will be the coming of the Son of Man. Matthew 24, verses 37 through 39. So what was Jesus trying to tell his disciples? Simply this, that people were unprepared for the flood because life was going along in a very normal way. There could be no better picture of a predictable life than this: eating and drinking and being merry and getting married. That's the way life is. No wonder Noah's contemporaries were unprepared for disaster when life was so normal. and so will be, Jesus said, before his return. Things will be normal. Therefore, you must also be ready for the Son of Man, who is coming at an unexpected hour. There it is again, the word unexpected.
So we've been waiting about 2,000 years. About 2,000 years. And it's clear that the Apostle Paul wrote to the church at Thessalonica midway in the first century that he thought that Christ might be returning at any time. And it appears that these Thessalonians were so sure that a few of them had even quit their jobs just simply to wait for Christ's return. Today, we're still waiting. Now, some earnest believers are waiting for, quote, the archangel's call and the sound of God's trumpet. Others are waiting for the kingdom that will come to pass like the working of leaven that's found in the dough of our world, found in Matthew 13. And yet, still, there's another great many of us testify to our waiting, probably without even realizing what we're saying, when we state during Holy Communion that Christ has died, Christ is risen, and Christ will come again. We are expressing the fact that we are waiting. But let's further address the manner in which we wait. Christ says in Luke 12:34, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." And he also includes the words, "to be dressed for action." Why? So we will be ready for our master's return. Also seen in Luke 12. In other words, if we believe that the kingdom of if we believe in the kingdom of God, we will live with kingdom values. We will live as if this world is not the end of it all. Quite simply, we will begin putting more and more of our treasures in heaven. And before you know it, our hearts will follow our treasures. Because as Jesus said, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also.
Here, in a sense, then, is the very essence of prophecy. Have your treasures in the right place. This is the ultimate point about everything concerning the second coming of Christ, that we should have our treasures where they belong, in acts of kindness and charity, evangelism, and loving sacrifice that characterizes God's kingdom. Then, well, when will Christ return? I don't know. I'm not sure I really care. But I do know that I want to be living in the style of God's kingdom. And that means I will be ready for the party whenever it comes. You see, there are some things that we just don't know. And that Jesus said, we will never know. We don't know when he'll return. We only know that it will be like a thief in the night. You don't know when a thief is coming, and that's the nature of the thief's business. And Jesus said that his return will be in that style. So no, I don't know when he's coming. But I do know how to be ready, and that is the key. Not knowing about the date, but knowing how to be ready. The secret is to be so in love with Christ and God's purposes that we don't get unduly attached to this world. Therefore, whenever he comes, we'll be ready. And here's still another thing that we need to know, that God is so pleased with those who are faithful that when the Master does come, he will tuck in his robe in his belt so that he can wait the tables for us, because Jesus said, it is God's pleasure. Hear that again. God's pleasure to give us the kingdom. Do we need to know anything more than that? No. So let's get ready. We don't know when it will be, but we will be dressed for the party whenever. In the meantime, let us live in kingdom style. In his name, amen.